Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
The gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So every time, of course, these days that we have a connection with guests, sometimes something... What's erupted now, of course, is that our special guest, Chris Rutkowski, is recovering from a bit of a sore throat. So if he sounds froggy, if he sounds disconnected, then that will be his fault. No, it's not his fault. It's Kirk Collins' fault.
Me? What did I do? But, you know, on the other hand, he's got a great excuse. Any question he doesn't want to answer, he's like, oh, my throat.
God, and I sound like Gravel Gertie today. That sounds perfect.
But think of it this way. Politicians have been perfecting that art.
That's true. That's absolutely true. Yeah. So we'll see how long my voice lasts with this thing today.
Well, we'll keep you going there, and if we have to do frequent breaks, the listeners will never hear it. Actually, years ago, I had a guest on who was very ill, and I won't mention his name, and I had to basically edit out 30, 40 coughs per segment. And, you know, kind of sad, but he came across very well when he got rid of the coughing. But the reverse picture is, on one episode of the PowerCast that shall not be named because I don't think you'll know, I had to redo all my parts. And the reason is there was something weird about the setup where it didn't pick up my mic properly. See, nobody cares.
That was the loud applause that you're hearing there.
But that's the normal applause I get, which is total silence.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're always happy to have Chris on the show because there are so many things to talk about, and obviously, being one of the foremost people in Canadian ufology, there are a lot of things to discuss. But I'm going to ask you both, you and our special guest co-host, Kurt Collins, the same question, which has nothing to do with what we plan to talk about. And that is, over the years, we've had discussions about Skinwalker Ranch, of course, and the alleged mysteries there. And last week with Erica Lukes, don't know, Kurt, if you heard the episode yet, Erica said it's a bunch of bunk. Either of you guys have a stand on Skinwalker Ranch, Chris?
Well, I've never been out there, but I've talked with MJ Benias quite a bit. He has been out there, and even he admitted to me that nothing happened when he was out there, and he thought that it's more the atmosphere rather than anything else. So I lean in the direction that there's probably not much going on there any different than anywhere else. Whether it's bunk, and that is to say that people are hyping it for their own purposes or whatever, I can't say that. But I suspect that there's nothing particularly unusual about the Skinwalker Ranch. I've certainly listened to enough people describe what's going on there, read some of the books and materials about it. But the overarching thing is that sometimes things do not happen when they're supposed to happen, and sometimes things happen when nothing's supposed to happen. You know, I don't see it as a window or a dimensional portal or anything like that. I think it's just an interesting location, you know, where it is there in the sort of mid-upper Pacific West or whatever. You know, there's military bases out there, and the area has a long history of all sorts of traditions. So I suspect if you convince yourself that something's going to happen out there, it's going to happen. And if you're somebody who doesn't believe in that sort of stuff, then you might as well just go for a walk down Main Street. So my opinion is that it's nothing particularly special. I remain to be convinced.
What about portal areas in general? Do you think there's specific locations around the world that seem to have an unusually high incidence of paranormal encounters?
Not that I've seen. I know that there is a fellow who is trying to use Bruce Cathy's grid system, and he was trying to say that there is a place up here in Canada near a place called Manigatogan that, according to all the calculations, and he showed me all the great calculations. He was a regular Hal Puthoff, and that he said that there is definitely a portal in this particular area. But, you know, there that area didn't really have much happening. In fact, it was quiescent compared to so many other places across the province. So I suspect that there really isn't much to the whole portal idea.
Kurt Collins, what do you think about Skinwalker Ranch?
Well, I'm even less connected than Chris is, but the impression that I get is that we essentially have, instead of a haunted house, we have a haunted ranch, and we had a billionaire buy it for that reason, that there were strange things supposed to happen. He'd been told stories, he believed it, and he hires a team of people to go out and report on strange things. And they go in with a certain attitude, and, you know, essentially, and we've got a television show about it, which is pretty much operating on the same premise, and it's similar to the haunted house shows. Some of the same equipment, and I'm not sure if Robert Bigelow, being the owner, has, you know, people, his employees are trying to please him. You know, that's one thing. But I think expectations do play into it, and we're told again and again, there's all these stories. They have these mountains of evidence, but all we're really getting are these secondhand reports and not just data that proves anything.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. It's the haunted house analogy. That's a really good way of putting it.
Well, I think we should point out that Bigelow no longer owns the property. Now, I noticed here one thing which kind of upset me a little bit about Bigelow. And he seems to me like he's possibly a perfectly sincere person. But they mention the fact that he owns budget suites. And few people say this is a low-end, extended-stay motel chain. And the reviews of those properties aren't that high.
Well, I mean, that's how he made his money, was in hotels originally, as I understand it. So, you got to pay the bill somehow, I suppose.
Yeah, sometimes you wonder, maybe if you're getting that kind of review, upgrade the properties. But what do I know about hotels? I know, having stayed in them, I know during a period of time we were between apartments, we stayed in motels, and we ran into some perfectly awful places. And I won't mention who and what they are, but some perfectly awful places. So I understand if you want to save a few dollars, and hotels are very expensive now, unless you have no choice. Anyway, away from portal areas and Skinwalker Ranch, on to the folks up north for me in Canada. Now, one thing that's been pointed out to me that you can expand on, this we can take for a while, how in terms of ufology, Canada has been at the forefront in many areas. Please tell us why.
Well, you know, Gene, Canada is in there like a dirty sock when it comes to ufology. Canada has been involved from the very beginning with various aspects. Certainly, early days, 1947, 48, the United States had a number of air bases in eastern Canada. And sure enough, that's where some of the first UFO reports or flying saucer reports were coming from. In fact, one of the first flying saucer photographs came out of Newfoundland. And I know ever since then, Canada and the United States have had a very close association. Certainly, Canada and the United States are partners in NORAD, North American Defense. And as part of that, we do know that NORAD does track UFOs. And because of there are reports that come in through Canada into the United States and from the United States into Canada. So the association between Canada and United States is very much intertwined. And, you know, over the next little while, we can go into some of the finer details. I mean, Stan Friedman did most of his UFO work in Canada. He was in Canada for quite a number of decades. He had moved from the United States, to Canada, to New Brunswick.
Let's do our break here, guys. We have Chris Rutkowski. We have Kirk Collins. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Hey, listeners, I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
Here's a question for you. Why is it that some people aren't as stressed out about the future as you'd think they'd be? Answer? They're probably among the millions of Americans who have prepared themselves with emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. If the worst ever happens, literally millions of American families are already protected from dealing with empty store shelves. Is yours? If not, go to MyPatriotSupply.com right now and grab some emergency food kits, at least one for each member of your family. These kits give you a wide variety of delicious meals that average over 2,000 calories per day. Everything stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. Order your kits now by going to MyPatriotSupply.com. Your order will ship fast and arrive discreetly in unmarked boxes. Listen, this is something you need to jump on now, before the next news headline stuns the world. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
GCN's policy is open forum, avoiding censorship. Defense costs for words spoken outside of our control supersede the ability to deliver voices to this important talk platform. The First Amendment is the foundation of our core values. Cancel culture is silencing voices regardless of perspective. Freedom to speak is in the balance. Support the legitimacy of speech itself. Consider donating to SaveGCN.com. That's SaveGCN.com.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com, or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. ShopSuperTea.com.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
So Chris is talking about the advances in Canadian ufology, mentioning, for example, that the late Stan Friedman moved from the U.S. to Canada. Let's pick up from there.
Sure, Stanton Friedman did most of his UFO work in Canada the last several decades of his life. We're here in Canada, in New Brunswick. He had moved to Fredericton to be closer with his wife's family. And, I mean, he certainly traveled all around North America and around the world from North America. In fact, he used to bemoan when he was popping in to see me and when I went to see him, that traveling from Fredericton, New Brunswick to anywhere by airplane was quite a problem, and it involved several stops and milk runs and things like that. So he certainly had a lot of trouble flying in and out of a small place in Canada, but it was what he wanted to do, and he certainly made his impression on ufology in so many other ways. But so many other people in ufology have Canadian connections. Certainly, Betty and Barney Hill, for example, everybody knows the story of Betty and Barney Hill and their UFO encounter. Well, where were they coming home from? Montreal, Canada. And so there's a definite Canadian connection there. And speaking of that, Whitley Strieber, he, in one of his books, The Key, which is not very well known but is very instrumental in describing his studies and discussions of UFOs, everything that happened in the book The Key took place in Canada. So, you know, you could just go on and on and on by, you know, naming various individuals who have been involved in ufology in one form or another, these are certainly some of the people who have been involved.
One of the things you're known for is the Canadian UFO survey that's released every year, and you wrote a book, I believe, with Jeff Dittman, the Canadian UFO Report. And so tell our listeners what that book was about and how much of it was historical versus based on reports.
Well, I mean, Canadian UFO Report, the book, Jeff and I took it upon ourselves. We had been doing the survey for a number of years. We started in 1989 doing a sort of a snapshot of all the UFO reports that had been filed in Canada. We'd been urged to, you know, to put some of it down on paper. And so we produced the Canadian UFO Report as a book. It covered sort of a historical survey of reports in Canada, some of the classic sightings, everything from the Shag Harbor UFO crash that is becoming more well known to the Falcon Lake incident that I know a little, if people are knowing a little bit more about it. But we covered many other cases in there, and a lot of the cases came either directly from reports that had been filed, but we certainly drew a lot on official documents that we'd found in the Canadian National Archives. Library and Archives Canada was the repository for UFO reports from the 1940s up until the present. Before the library was actually starting to do that, the reports were filed with the Royal Canadian Air Force, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, a number of other institutions, and they eventually transferred their documents and files over to the National Archives. And so we had an excellent source of data to draw on right from the 1940s, the beginning of ufology, to then the present time. I think the book came out just before the turn of the millennium. So there was a lot of cases in there that people weren't aware of, and we wanted to tell the side of the story that most people didn't know, that Canada was very well represented in terms of UFOs nationally and now internationally, some cases that were really quite astounding.
So as far as the reports that you're receiving on an annual basis, can you tell us a little bit about the sources that you draw from and how the reports have changed since, say, the classic days of the flying saucer reports? You know, what are the trends?
Right. Well, I've mentioned this a couple of times in this forum and others that, I started investigating UFOs back in the 70s because I'm very, very old. Not like Gene, spring chicken. But I had been investigating, and then I had started at university to get my bachelor's degree. I took a lot of astronomy courses, ended up majoring in astronomy. And then I went on to for my master's in education, specifically science education, so that I'm now a science educator and a science writer. But along the way, I had taken an interest in UFOs because it was one of those things that was all gee whiz and wouldn't it be great if, and people are always asking me, you're an astronomer, is there real life out there? And people were reporting UFOs to the astronomy department, and my professors were not all that crazy about the subject. It was really annoying because everybody knew that UFOs were nonsense to them. So what are they going to do about it? And I suggested, well, you can just, you know, tell them to talk to me. I'll take them the phone calls for you. And I ended up talking with literally hundreds and hundreds of, and hundreds of people who had been seeing things in the sky and simply wanted a friendly ear to you know, who would listen to them. So the, over the years, I ended up writing about what I had heard. And then in about the early 1990s, I had been in Ottawa at the National Research Council for a couple of meetings. And they have to understand that the National Research Council of Canada was where there was an active UFO investigation program, what most people would like to have had happening in the United States. From the 1960s to about 1991, 92, and then up to about 1995, the National Research Council of Canada was getting UFO reports from people in Canada, from pilots, from academics, from scholars, from the average citizen, from farmers, from butcher bakers, candlestick makers, and so forth. And they're investigating some of them. Not very many, it turns out, but they're investigating some of them. And the Royal Canadian Mounted Police were facilitating this by, having like detachments all across the country, that if somebody saw something in Saskatchewan, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police detachment there would investigate and send the report into Ottawa, and Ottawa would therefore have the reports. And these reports were made public in a sort of a way, in the sense that they were deposited in the National Library, and up until about 20 years ago, you had to go down to Ottawa and look in the National Library yourself physically to look through the reports. But about 20 years ago, the National Library decided that it was going to digitize significant portions of various collections, and one of the collections that they decided to digitize was the UFO reports. And so they did. Somewhere around 9,000 pages of documents were digitized and were made available.
Let's do our break here. More about that with Chris, Kurt, and Gene. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Hi, I'm Al Abaroa, founder of Knight Strategic Wealth. Inflation is picking up, markets are volatile, and the dream of a comfortable retirement is harder to attain than ever before. Nobody wants to run out of money in retirement. That's why I'm going to share something that your financial advisor doesn't want you to know. With our investment strategy, when the stock market goes up, you earn a market-linked return that locks in every year. And when the stock market goes down, your investments won't lose a dime. There are no unnecessary fees, and it works for your investments, money at a brokerage firm, or even money at a bank. It's simple, it's safe, and that's why savvy investors work with us. Want to learn more? Text FREE to 833-898-0500 and we'll send our retirement readiness kit directly to your phone right now. If you want to help build a retirement portfolio that will go up with the market and never lose money, get our retirement readiness kit today and see how this strategy can help secure your future. Text FREE to 833-898-0500. Text FREE to 833-898-0500.
You
USA Radio News with Kenneth Burns.
A tornado that hit Andover, Kansas Friday night damaged about 1,000 structures. Officials say the number is expected to climb as they do more assessments. So far, no deaths from the storm. Officials say about 70% of secondary searches are complete. The tornado first developed in southeast Wichita before moving northeast. Kansas Highway Patrol is assessing damage from the air. Ukrainian forces were fighting village by village to hold back a Russian advance, while the United Nations was brokering a civilian evacuation from the last Ukrainian stronghold in what's left of Mariupol. 100,000 civilians are estimated to be in the city, and up to 1,000 are living beneath a sprawling steel plant from the Soviet era. Tech stocks sunk Wall Street Friday. The Nasdaq had its biggest monthly loss since 2008, while the S&P 500 recorded its worst month since the beginning of the pandemic. This is USA Radio News. A member of British Parliament has resigned after he admitted to watching pornography twice in the House of Commons. Neil Parish was suspended Friday from the Conservative Party over the allegations. He tells the BBC that the first time was an accident, the second time was deliberate.
And the one thing I wasn't doing, and which I will take to my grave as being true, is I was not actually making sure people could see it. In fact, I was trying to do quite the opposite. I was wrong what I was doing.
Parrish says his biggest crime was looking at it a second time while waiting to vote on the side of the chamber. A federal judge ruled there was enough evidence to convict socialite Ghislaine Maxwell. She was convicted of recruiting teenage girls for Jeffrey Epstein between 1994 and 2004. But the judge also handed Maxwell's legal team a victory, concluding that three conspiracy counts were charged for the same crime, and she could only be sentenced for one. The reduction of counts won't have much effect on sentencing. Maxwell could spend decades in prison, if not several years. You are listening to USA Radio News.
Hey folks, Tom D for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, ghosts, zombies, UFOs, crop circles, and more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people who seek a little more than the other dating services offer. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and you want to connect with others, use the code GEORGE for a substantial discount. So many people want to share their experiences with the paranormal, the afterlife, the unusual, and this is the place to meet and share common interests with those of like minds. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com. That's ParanormalDate.com. Use the code word GEORGE and start meeting others. Get going now and connect with someone you like.
This is Jacques Vallée. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
This is interesting here that a public institution does the digitizing. Here in the U.S., we have people like Barry Greenwood and David Marler, and even Erica Lukes, digitizing. Private people have to do the digitizing of UFO-related records. And, of course, the government thinks that no UFO case occurred before 2004.
Indeed. And even my own collection of UFO reports, I've turned it over to an archive here in my part of Canada, and the plan is for them to digitize it. So it's good that the preservation of historical material like this is going ahead, and yes, thanks to David Marler and to Jan Aldrich and Barry Greenwood and Erica, that, you know, we are getting this material more available. But I have to make the point that this is sort of a retrospective, because the National Library of Canada, through the NRC, has been doing this all along. In the United States, ever since the Blue Book finished in about 69 and 70, we really haven't had much input or information about what was being seen, what was being reported, how it was being reported, who's in charge of it, and so forth, except through the very diligent research by people like Paul Dean and Barry Greenwood and Jan and people like that, who have really dug deep and found some documents show that, you know, there had been UFO cases reported through the military, the Department of National Defense, Defense, or Department of Defense, rather, for many years. And it was only in, you know, just a matter of, what is it, not quite 10 years ago now, that we found out that there was a UFO program that was in, you know, working in 2007 for about 5 years. And, you know, this has spawned our discussions about the United States Navy and why is the Air Force more involved and so forth. But the Pentagon, you know, finally fessed up and said that there was at least a, something that was happening in 2007. But that still leaves, was it 30-year gap, a 40-year, 50-year gap there? That shows that, I know, we don't really know what was going on. But in Canada, there are reports where... we're continually being reported. And what's curious is we do know that because of the association between NORAD, or within NORAD with Canada and the United States, that there was some exchange of information, that reports were being filtered into the United States. There were some cases from American personnel, military personnel, that made it into the National Archives, into the NRC, National Research Council. And so we can suspect that there had been some organizations or some department within the United States that was, you know, collecting this information as well, because we know there was something in Canada, and Canada really only mirrored in so many ways what was happening in the United States. There probably was something going on in the United States all along as well.
Interesting you mentioned Paul Dean. Paul Dean's from Australia, but he's done a lot of work in getting information on cases here.
Yeah, and it shows you how with the international scope, you know, these days, you know, people bemoan the internet for various reasons, but, you know, because so much is getting digitized and so many documents are now available, and you can file Freedom of Information requests from all over the place, you know, you can be somebody like Paul Dean and obtain formerly classified documents about a military exercise in Vietnam in the 1960s and, you know, have that material available.
Yeah, that's interesting. And the Canadian approach, it seems a whole lot more transparent than the United States effort ever was. One thing that we found from researching some of the documents from the 70s, the government decided, since they knew the Freedom of Information Act was there, that they would put less UFO information in the paper form, and then if they did, they used some kind of deceptive language. And I think that's where we get the language like the Advanced Aerospace Weapons Application Program that became ATIP, you know, where it's kind of camouflaged. But apparently the something was going on, and we've not found much of it. But but as far as the government's policy on UFOs, it's more open. But how open would you say it is
in Canada?
Yes.
The Canadian approach was significantly different than the United States in the sense that Canada viewed it as a scientific problem, whereas the United States viewed it more as a security or defense problem. And actually, there was a big debate in the 1960s, and this is very well documented in a new book that's out right now by Matthew Hayes called Search for the Unknown, about the Canadian government's dealing with UFOs. And the military, the Royal Canadian Air Force, really didn't want to have anything to do with UFOs. They were really listening very closely to what was happening with regard to Blue Book. And, of course, Blue Book's conclusion, at least according to Condon anyways, was that there's nothing to it. So the Canadians really wanted to get out of the UFO biz as well. And yet they recognized that reports were continually coming in, that many were coming from military personnel, and we have to keep track of this somehow. Who's going to be looking into this? So they offloaded it to the scientists at the National Research Council, who were looking at it as a scientific problem. And their view was that, you know, if we had enough information, if we had enough data, we'd be able to explain everything. So let's actually try and gather the data. And so there was this concerted effort to try and understand what people were seeing. And the attitude was, if somebody had seen a disc moving in the sky, well, you know, maybe they were looking at an aircraft from a funny angle or a helicopter or a cloud or you name it, or a balloon or whatever, or maybe the person was just making it up. So that was the attitude, but at least the view was not in terms of a defense issue, and that's why the Canadian documentation is completely intact right from the 1940s to the present, that they were never viewed as a security issue. It was simply a scientific issue, and for that, they kept on going. Now, that did change in the 1990s, but up until then, UFOs were a scientific problem.
Well, in the U.S., of course, they've never looked at UFOs as a scientific problem. Even the current research is very heavily focused on, do they represent a threat to national security?
Absolutely. And, you know, there is some language like that in Canada as well. But by and large, they were viewed as a science issue. And that caused no end of concern in the National Research Council staff, because a lot of the scientists there were, they didn't believe in UFOs. Some of the individuals involved, there was a fellow named Peter Millman who simply did not believe in the UFOs at all. Ed Leith and George Clark and people like that, they really didn't give UFOs much thought, because they were very much interested in the hard science. In the case of Ed Leith, who was a UFO investigator for the National Research Council, he was a geologist, and he was more interested in terrestrial sciences rather than extraterrestrial sciences. Peter Millman was an expert in meteors and fireballs and meteorites. It was only a sort of an association by the fact that, many meteors are sometimes misidentified as UFOs, so that's how poor Peter Millman got roped into it. But he was very, very vocal that UFOs were all explained, nothing to see here, folks, and people who were interested in them were just simply old foolish. And what happened was that Peter... he suffered the same fate as a lot of the ardent debunkers, where he would come up with a flippant explanation that made absolutely no sense whatsoever, that sort of resulted in him looking a little foolish and sheepish sometimes.
Chris, Gene, and Kurt, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at rockoids.com. That's rockoids, rockoids.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
A lot can happen in 6 seconds. A rodeo ride, a dramatic basketball win, and the world record holder can solve a Rubik's Cube. 6 seconds is how long it takes for an 18-wheeler traveling at a safe speed to come to a complete stop. And in those 6 seconds, that truck will travel the length of 2 football fields. So please, give them room. Never cut in front of a large truck for any reason. Our roads, our responsibility. Learn more at sharetheroadsafely.gov.
I need help with my taxes. Where can I find free tax help?
If you make $54,000 a year or less, you can participate in the IRS Volunteer Income Tax Assistance, VITA, or the Tax Counseling for the Elderly, TCE, programs. IRS-certified volunteers provide free basic tax prep for low to moderate income taxpayers. The TCE program is specifically for taxpayers age 60 and older. Go to IRS.gov and enter free tax prep in the search box to find a VITA or TCE site near you.
Hi, this is Tracy Torme, screenwriter-producer. You're listening to Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Chris Witkowski is with us with Kurt Collins, and he's talking about the state of UFO research in Canada, lots of other stuff.
I was just talking about Peter Milman, who a meteoriticist, and there was actually a crop circle that was found in, I believe this is the one that was found in Saskatchewan, out by Langenberg. And Peter Milman was asked by some media, you know, what did he think, you know, what was the explanation for it? And without even going out to see the crop circles out in Langenberg, without even reading up on it, without knowing much, he proceeded to lecture people about fairy ring mushrooms and how fairy ring mushrooms are obviously the cause of crop circles, because they form circles, and if people, you know, look at them in the grass, they'd think that they were landing marks from aliens and UFOs. The trouble was that the crop circles in Langenberg in 1974, if I'm not mistaken, or was it 73, bore no similarity to fairy ring mushroom rings, which do create these three beautiful rings in grass, but usually in lawns, and they form you know, fairly decent size, you know, several feet, over a period of years, whereas the marks that were in the field in Saskatchewan had formed literally overnight. They were in very, very tall grass. There were no mushrooms found, and they were swirled and pressed down to the ground, you know, from grass that was several feet high. So, you know, the fairy ring mushroom explanation did not work in any way at all. And yet we have this eminent scientist who, you know, I think he was even in Who's Who, giving his pronouncement on what it was, and it just simply didn't fly, you know, as UFOs would.
It sounds like you really phoned that one in. So on the topic of crop circles for a second, so they were closely associated with UFOs and aliens at one time, and you hear a lot less about them these days. So they're weird. We know some of them are man-made. Do you think they have any connection to UFOs, and what's your opinion on it today?
No, I don't think that crop circles have much to do with UFOs. However, interestingly, most people don't realize that crop circles started in Canada. They did not start in England. They started in Canada in the 1960s. In fact, some of the documents that we discovered from going through the National Archives include actual photographs of rings that were found in a field in Alberta in 1967. And this particular set of circles was investigated by the Royal Canadian Air Force. In fact, the Canadian Air Force put out a special scientific memorandum describing the crop circles, which at that time were thought to be associated with UFOs. In fact, I think the document says investigations or studies into crop circles or marks on the ground associated with UFOs. So that's back in 1967, long before things started appearing in England. I remember that, you know, things sort of calmed down after that, and we didn't hear much of anything until the 1980s or so. And I remember when the wave of crop circles was really starting up in England, and everybody and their dog was seeing them, thanks to Doug and Dave and so forth. But I remember being interviewed here in Canada by a reporter saying, well, you know, what do you think of the crop circles that are in Britain? And I said, well, you know, I don't really understand, you know, what people thinking that has something to do with aliens. And, you know, there's a lot more fields of wheat in Manitoba and Saskatchewan and Canada than there are in England. And it makes more sense that they would be, you know, found here in Canada, you know, right outside practically my doorstep. And obviously the aliens had been listening to the broadcast, because the very next morning crop circles were found here in Manitoba, just a matter of about a mile or so away from the Trans-Canada Highway, even closer than that, actually. They started spreading like wildfire all across North America from there. And it just didn't make any sense whatsoever. We actually did catch a few people who were responsible, not to the extent of Doug and Dave, but certainly some people who had made some marks on the ground and finally fessed up when we confronted them with it. I don't think that they had anything to do with UFOs. However, with something quite interesting, we had been doing the Canadian UFO survey since the 80s, and as the crop circle phenomenon took off, the number of physical trace cases associated with UFOs declined to where it is now, practically nothing. It used to be, you know, quite common in the 60s and into the 70s and a little bit into the 80s that there'd be marks associated with UFOs that had gone by, rings, charred vegetation, and so forth. And those completely disappeared. Ted Phillips and his trace cases, you know, after the crop circles started appearing, they really took over. No UFOs seen with the crop circles, but in terms of the physical trace cases, sometimes there are physical traces not associated with the UFOs that made them either. It's very interesting to speculate on as to why physical trace cases, close encounters of the second kind, have almost gone completely. It's strange to me too, because the MUFON, they actually have their field training exercises where they, you know, teach field investigators how to take samples and set up grid lines and so forth. And yet, physical trace cases are almost gone. In fact, I'm just trying to think of the last one that we've had in Canada. I mean, we have something like between 20 and 25,000 separate UFO reports in Canada now since the year 1989. And I would be hard-pressed to think of any physical trace cases in the past 20 years at least, and certainly some in there, maybe a little bit before that. So, you know, certainly ufology has changed. There's been some subtle and some dramatic changes.
This is very interesting here, because over the years, in the earlier years, the late Ted Phillips collected loads of cases involving landing traces. Is there a reason for that? Does that fit in with the theory that maybe the UFOs really did leave us long ago, and what we're seeing now has a conventional explanation or two?
Well, I suppose it's possible. I mean, one of the puzzles about ufology is that aliens, by rights, don't have to land on Earth or come down and be visible at all for them to analyze what's going on down here on Earth. I mean, we have remote sensing satellites that, you know, can tell us exactly what the soil moisture and the various layers of ocean vegetation and so forth is like from space. So, you know, you don't have to come down and land grab a bucket full of soil or sand and fly off again. You know, certainly, you know, that's what we did when we went to the moon, but we had no ideas of what it was like. But in terms of planets, remote sensing works very well. So why would UFOs have to come down here at all? It sort of is part of the mystery.
So the one idea is that we're a tourist attraction, but if so, it sounds like the visitors have gotten better about cleaning up after themselves, so that's good.
Yeah, either that or we're a penal colony, or maybe, and I think the one that I liked, and Friedman used to talk about this, that, you know, we're part of an anthropology class from Zeta Reticuli, and they're in the aliens are in some sort of alien version of duck blinds, keeping an eye out, watching us, and occasionally grabbing a sample and you know, grabbing one of us and taking them on board. That explains all of abductions as well.
So we were talking about the U.S. We mentioned the ATIP program a little bit. Something was released recently from the Department of Defense. They put some of the documents from the OSAP ATIP program online, and most of them were very boring. The closest, the two closest ones, one was the discussion of the Drake equation, and the only one that specifically mentioned UFOs was about acute, I don't have the title in front of me, but it basically dealt with physical effects from mysterious vehicles. And, you know, it really didn't talk much about UFOs except when it gave some of the references. And so one of the most bizarre claims, besides the typical things like sunburn and maybe radiation sickness, was an unaccounted for pregnancy.
You have raised an interesting specter there. Let's talk about it more. Kurt and Chris and Gene, you're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience, so I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
You don't sit behind a desk every day to earn a living. You're out and about making it happen. And sometimes you get a little bit behind on your paperwork, you know, like bookkeeping and paying your taxes. It's easy to get behind on paying your taxes. It happens to the best of us. And you know what happens next. The big bad IRS comes knocking on your door. And when that happens, you need to call the good old boys at the Tax Doctor. Let them do what they do best. Deal and negotiate with the IRS so you pay the lowest you can in back taxes that the law allows. We are a 100% U.S.-based company, and we've saved our clients millions over the years in back taxes. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, call my friends right now at the Tax Doctor and learn more.
800-507-3137.
800-507-3137. 800-507-3137. That's 800-507-3137.